Bottom line is what I'm getting at is that at the highest levels, demand is off the charts through physical redemption. Off the charts. Down here, it's still strong, but nowhere near as strong as it should be because people are too emotional. And I think, to me, this is just shaking out.
You're watching Silver News Daily. Subscribe for more.
What if everything you're seeing in the silver market right now is designed to push you out before the real move begins? Because over the past few days, silver hasn't just dipped. It's been crushed, dropping violently, wiping out weeks of gains, shaking confidence, and convincing small investors that maybe the rally is over before it even began. And that's exactly where the danger lies. Because while retail investors are watching the price collapse and questioning everything, some of the biggest players in the market are doing the exact opposite of what you'd expect. They're not running away. They're stepping in. Andy Shechtman has been warning about this exact setup, a moment where price action and reality completely disconnect, where the charts tell one story, but the physical market tells another. And if you're only watching the price, you're missing the bigger picture entirely. Think about it. Silver didn't just randomly fall. This kind of move doesn't happen in a vacuum. It happens when pressure is applied, when positions are forced out, when liquidity is drained, and when weaker hands are pushed to sell at exactly the wrong time. Because every major bull market has this phase, the shakeout. The moment where conviction is tested, where it feels like the thesis is breaking down, right before something much bigger begins to unfold. And right now, the signals couldn't be more conflicting. On the surface, you have collapsing prices, rising yields, a strong dollar, and a market that looks like it's rolling over. But underneath that surface, something else is happening entirely. Inventories are tightening, supply deficits are growing, and physical silver is quietly moving, not into the hands of panic sellers, but into the hands of those who understand exactly what this phase represents. This is where the misdirection begins, because if you can convince the majority that silver is weak, that the opportunity has passed, that the risk is too high, then you create the perfect environment to accumulate what's becoming increasingly scarce. And by the time the narrative shifts, by the time the headlines catch up, by the time the price starts moving in the other direction, the window to act at these levels is already gone. So the real question isn't why silver is falling. The real question is, who is taking the other side of this trade right now? And what do they see coming that most people don't?
As intuitive, as smart, and as qualified, his background as a, if I'm not mistaken, a forensic accountant, amongst many other things. Brilliant guy. I watched that video with him and Elijah, and I think on just about every point, he's right. It mirrors a lot of what Catherine Austin Fitz said on my show. And he's right. You know, he talks about the differences between a CBDC and a stablecoin. And, you know, there are laws in place in states like Florida, here where I am and you are, where, you know, Governor DeSantis has tried to issue laws saying no CBDC in this state. A central bank digital currency frightens people, and rightfully so. And Rob talked about stablecoins and CBDCs and the efficiency and some of the things that he's for digitization, that it would provide a greater speed, where a wire can take a day or two coming from Europe just like that. It's across, a massive reduction in fees, a 98% reduction in fees, and settles in 7 seconds instead of a day or two. In fact, I've had international wires that take at least a day or two. All of these things are great, but as he spoke to, it has also the ability to not be so great. So when you look at President Trump really speaking out against CBDCs, was it in an effort to push an agenda of stablecoin? Now, Catherine Austin Fitz would tell you, yes, it was, that stablecoins are nothing more than a CBDC in stablecoin clothing. Even though it's issued by a third party, now the central bank part is taken out. It's no longer a central bank issuing it, but a third party, like USA Tether, who, by the way...
what you're seeing right now in silver, looks like weakness. But when you break it down, it starts to look a lot more like something else entirely. Because this isn't just a random pullback. This is one of the most aggressive sell-offs silver has seen in months. A sharp collapse that wiped out over 6% in a single session, pushing prices down toward the high $60 and dragging the entire market sentiment with it. And when moves like that happen, the natural reaction is panic. Investors start asking if the rally is over, if the top is already in, if they've missed their chance. But look at what's actually driving this. You've got a Federal Reserve that's doubling down on higher rates, yields pushing higher, making non-yielding assets like silver less attractive on paper, and a U.S. dollar that's holding strong, putting additional pressure on commodities across the board. On top of that, geopolitical tension is doing something unexpected. Normally, conflict would send metals soaring. But instead, rising oil prices are feeding inflation fears, which in turn reinforces the Fed's hawkish stance, keeping pressure on silver instead of lifting it, so what you end up with, and is a perfect storm of bearish signals, falling prices, rising yields, a strong dollar, and headlines that make it seem like silver is losing its momentum. But here's where it gets interesting. Because all of these forces, they operate on the surface, they affect sentiment, they influence short-term flows, they drive paper trading decisions, but they don't change the underlying reality of the market. And that's the key distinction. Because what we're witnessing right now isn't necessarily a breakdown in silver's long-term story. It's a macro-driven repricing event, a reset, a pressure phase, where external forces are temporarily overwhelming the narrative. And when that happens, price can move in ways that feel completely disconnected from fundamentals. It can overshoot. It can accelerate downward. It can convince the majority that something is wrong, even when the bigger picture hasn't changed at all. And that's exactly the kind of environment where misdirection thrives, because if you're only focused on the price, then right now everything looks broken. But if you start looking beyond the price, you begin to realize this move might not be signaling weakness. It might be setting the stage for something much bigger.
CEO of USA Tether is Bo Hines, who was Trump's crypto czar through August. But to Catherine's point, the stablecoin, whoever issues it, whether it be Tether, JP Morgan, Visa, whatever, all of them run through the same plumbing system and go into and out of the Treasury Department. That they also have in them some very interesting things. Now, they have in them AML properties, anti-money laundering, where'd you get your money? KYC, know your client, who are you and where'd you get your money? And KYT, who are you, where'd you get your money, and know your transaction, what you're going to buy? That's all in there. But to Catherine's point, there is verbiage missing from the Genius Act legislation, the stablecoin law, that doesn't speak to removing any programmability features so that they are programmable. So that, to Rob's point, we want to block you. We want to take your money. We want to sanction you for, you didn't pay your child support, so we're going to take it. You didn't get a vaccine? What are you doing? You're frozen. And all of these possibilities, as draconian and 1984 Orwellian as it may sound, it's kind of the nose under the tent. And Catherine thought very much so that, I don't mean to go far off the question you asked me, but Catherine said, in her mind, Trump was brought in specifically by whoever brought him in to usher the right, who always are our camp. And I'm not saying we're all right. I'm just saying libertarians, people who believe in sound money, all of us have had an aversion to digital money. And her point was, he was selected to and using election interference. We'll show you how bad it can get if there isn't election interference, is her thesis. Look at how bad it was, the perception of it. Was there? Why is it you need an ID to get into the Democratic National Convention, but you don't need one to vote? These kind of things. We need a digital ID. And to mix a digital ID with digital money, you are now into, you have a foray, you've just stepped into the digital money system, and that he was selected to bring over this side of the camp in and show them, hey, it's okay to have digital money, and it's okay as long as it's not a CBDC, it's third party, but we need a digital ID as well. So when you put all of this together, Rob's point is very succinct, and I'm with him, and I do think that there is something to be said for having assets and money assets like gold and silver outside of a system that absolutely is moving digital. I just got back from Vail, Colorado. I go there every year. I go skiing. My son's out there, and I go with a bunch of guys. I typically go to Whistler in January when I speak at the Vancouver Resource Investment Conference, which is all...
Just before we get going, we just launched the official Silver News Daily Telegram. To kick things off, we're running a 10-ounce silver giveaway. Yes, real physical silver, not a voucher, not digital credits, actual bullion. This Telegram will be our new home for real-time silver discussions, market insights, collection picks, and everything precious metals. It's where the community truly comes alive. Here's how to enter the 10-ounce silver giveaway. Be subscribed to Silver News Daily on YouTube. Turn on the notification bell. Comment 10-ounce giveaway on 3 separate videos. Be an active member of the Telegram group and say hi. Once we hit 500 active Telegram members, we'll pick one lucky winner to receive 10 ounces of silver shipped directly to you. So get in early, stay active. And this is where the real game begins. Because sharp moves like this boat, they don't just happen on their own. They're accelerated, they're amplified. And more often than not, they're engineered through the structure of the market itself. Look at what's been happening behind the scenes. Leveraged positions are getting wiped out. Funds that piled into silver during the run-up are now being forced to unwind. Not because they want to, but because they have to. Margin calls don't care about fundamentals. They don't care about long-term supply shortages. They don't care about where silver might be heading. They force selling instantly. And when that starts happening at scale, it creates a cascade. One position liquidates that pushes the price lower, which triggers another liquidation and another. Until what started as a pullback and turns into a full-blown flush. We've already seen signs of this. Leveraged silver, ETFs taking massive hits. Momentum-driven accounts exiting. Rapidly, algorithmic systems flipping from buyers to aggressive sellers. And here's the key detail most people miss. None of that selling and is based on physical silver, it's paper, it's contracts, it's leverage. It's exposure that exists in digital form, not in vaults. So when that unwinds, it can push the price down violently without a single ounce of real silver changing hands. Let that sink in. The price you're watching is being driven by forced liquidations in a paper market, not by a sudden flood of physical supply. And this is exactly where institutions thrive. Because while chaos is unfolding on the surface, they're not reacting emotionally. They're positioning. They understand that these liquidation events create artificial pricing, moments where silver can be acquired at levels that don't reflect its true scarcity. So while retail investors are seeing red and stepping back, institutions are stepping in quietly, patiently, and most importantly, strategically, because they've seen this before. They know that these violent shakeouts are part of the cycle. A necessary phase that clears out weak hands, resets positioning, and transfers assets from those reacting to those preparing. And if that's what this really is, then this sell-off isn't the end of the move. It's the setup for what comes next. But to understand just how big that disconnect is becoming, you have to look beyond the paper market entirely. Because the real story isn't happening on the charts. It's happening in the physical market, where something very different is unfolding.
Also owned by Vail Corporation and several other ski resorts all around America are owned by Vail Corporation, one of the biggest companies in the United States. They're 100% cashless. You go there with cash in your wallet and no credit card, you're not going to ski and you're going to starve, period. We are moving slowly to a situation where money will become digital. Now, that's not a stablecoin, but the stablecoin legislation goes into effect in January. So, yes, I think everything Rob said, and I would urge people not only to watch the interview that your son Elijah did with Rob, which was fantastic, but to go and check out some of Rob's other work. He's a smart guy, because it's real, and we are moving towards a digital system, whether we like it or not. And so having gold and silver gives you a little bit of refuge from that system.
In that same interview, Rob mentioned a emerging coalition in the physical precious metals industry between miners, those who have their own refining, and also wholesalers and retailers. Can you talk to us about what the metals industry advocates of sound money can do, what direction they can contribute that will help protect private property rights during this treacherous time?
Well, I think what he's talking about is sound money legislation in states like Florida, like Texas, like Wyoming, like Utah, like Idaho, et cetera, that are allowing and protecting, in Wyoming and others, protecting their constituents from the madness that is fiscal irresponsibility. And they are allowing their constituents through trade programs or exchange programs, or I don't know, I guess that's not the right word, through the ability to use gold and silver in commerce, daily life. And Texas is kind of leading the charge on that. Florida has a very similar legislation, but Texas is further along, where it is my understanding, you know, you still have the issue of federal capital gains tax that hasn't been taken out, which it should. I mean, especially with American Eagles, right? I mean, U.S. Mint, Treasury issues legal tender. You know, why do you pay capital gains on it if you're holding it just like you hold money in a checking account? You're not paying capital gains. But anyways, the bottom line is that what they're allowing, what it looks like they're going to allow, is you take your American coins, you send them to a depository like the Texas Bullion Depository, and maybe it expands into Brinks Vaults in Texas and other things, where they issue you an app on your phone, a digital app on your phone, on your credit card or credit card type of thing, that allows you to spend that money with no state sales tax. You still pay the capital gains tax federally, but no sales tax, and using that money. Now, let's look at it from a perspective of last year. You know, your dollar was down 10% on the dollar index. Not real good. It was down 150% in silver terms and 70 or 80% in gold terms. So even though you would be paying some capital gains tax, you're way ahead. And at the same time, you also have no sales tax on any of these transactions. Now, the law does say you could, if you wanted to, if you owned a dry cleaner, done again, and I have gold, and you say, I'll take a 10-ounce gold eagle for your dry cleaning. We could do that. That's what it says. You're not mandated to take it. And certainly giving change and walking around gold and silver in your pocket probably isn't the most safe and utilitarian way of doing things. You can, but it is moving towards a digital system that is backed by gold that you deposit into a state deposit.
And this is where the illusion completely breaks down. Because everything we've talked about so far, the sell-off, the liquidations, the macro pressure, that all exists in the paper market. But the physical market is telling a completely different story. While price is falling, silver isn't suddenly becoming abundant, it's becoming harder to find. We're now looking at the sixth consecutive year of structural deficits, meaning more silver is being consumed than produced year after year, with a projected shortfall of tens of millions of ounces in 2026 alone. Think about what that actually means. Every year, inventories are being drained, stockpiles are shrinking, and the system is relying on above-ground supply to fill a gap that isn't closing. Now, combine that with what's happening globally. Industrial demand isn't slowing down, it's accelerating. Green energy, solar expansion, electronics, infrastructure, all of it depends on silver. And unlike other metals, silver doesn't have true substitute. So even as price drops, demand doesn't disappear. It keeps pulling from the same limited pool. And here's where the disconnect becomes impossible to ignore. Because if silver is in a structural deficit, if inventories are falling, if demand is rising, then why is the price going down? That's the question more investors are starting to ask. And the answer lies in the separation between two markets that most people assume are the same: paper silver and physical silver. The paper market sets the price, but the physical market determines reality. And right now, those two are drifting further apart. You've got pricing being driven by leverage trades, algorithms, and short-term macro flows, while at the same time, real metal is being accumulated, moved, and quietly taken off the market. Not dumped, not oversupplied, but absorbed. And this is exactly what Andy Shechtman has been pointing to, a situation where the price no longer reflects. The true condition of the market, where the signal investors are relying on, is distorted. Because as long as paper supply can be expanded, contracts can be traded, and leverage can be applied, price can be pushed in directions that don't align with physical scarcity. But that only works until it doesn't. Because at some point, physical demand starts to matter more than paper positioning. At some point, delivery becomes more important than contracts. And when that shift happens, it doesn't adjust slowly. It snaps. Which means what we're seeing right now isn't just a disconnect. It's pressure building between what silver is priced at and what it may actually be worth. And when that gap starts to close, it won't be subtle.
That allows you the ability to hold your money and transact outside of U.S. dollars, which seem to have the the lasting and saving, retaining value quality of a melting ice cube. So yeah, I think that it is noble. And what Rob is doing, you know, he's been doing this for a while now. I have a lot of respect for what he's doing. It's not like he's making a ton of money doing this. He's doing it for all of us. So to guys like Rob, we owe him a debt of gratitude. And thank you, Rob. If you're watching this, you have my respect, always have, and maybe even a little bit more now. Thank you for what you're doing for the industry.
I loved your characterization as the U.S. dollar as a melting ice cube. It's more than a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but honestly, it's thought-provoking and worth discussion. Is if we have to pay capital gains tax on the nominal appreciation of our sound money that's already legal tender, how about an offsetting capital loss from the dollars that we hold that are also legal tender and are losing money, losing value?
Well, that's an interesting point, too, because what if you had filled your account, bought it at $5,400 gold, and now it's at $5,000, you spend it, you get a capital loss and no sales tax, and you're buying the product. So, you know, framing it in the reference of it only going higher, sure, but maybe there are times where you rush to spend something because you get a write-off at the same time and no sales tax. So, you know, there are benefits to all of this. But what it really does is it opens the eyes of the public. You know, I often looked at Bitcoin, Dunnigan, even though it's not something that I'm really big into. I just got off an interview with Kyle Chase. He's a Bitcoin guy I'm friends with and have interviewed with Mark Moss, with Natalie Brunell, with Paul Barron, with Swan. All of these companies and people who are Bitcoin folks. Now, it's not my deal, but I think it aligning the two communities, we have more in common than we don't. And I hate the divisiveness. I think it's stupid. Or, you know, the old Reese's peanut butter commercial where they bump into each other. Your peanut butter's in my chocolate. No, your chocolate's in my peanut butter. And they each take a bite. Like, wow, that's good. Well, that's the same thing here. We should be together. We should be united. We should not be divisive. Not only is your portfolio stronger, perhaps, but also so too is your understanding of monetary history and what's going on. Well, the same thing is true here. You open up the eyes of constituents who are like, wow, you mean gold and silver really did that? They're up that much? I thought they didn't pay interest. Oh, God, I guess it doesn't matter in a rising market. We need to put some of our money in gold and silver because the dollar has the lasting power of a melting ice cube. So if you are opening up the eyes of a good percentage of the people, and Rick Rule has told us many times, 0.5% allocation, not just in physical gold, but gold and gold-related equities across the entire financial matrix. He always said, from Joe and Jane Sixpack to the Harvard Endowment Fund, I get a kick out of the fact that Harvard Endowment Fund did buy a few hundred million, I think, worth of gold not too long ago. The point of it is you're waking up the public in these states. I don't think you see any blue states on the list yet, but a lot of the states with Republican leadership have, in my opinion, done what's right for their constituents, give them an alternative to holding their wealth in dollars that are continually debasing and depreciating, and put it into gold and silver, even though it doesn't pay interest.
And this is where the pressure really starts to build, because even as the market is being pushed down, the one force that hasn't gone away is demand. In fact, it's doing the opposite. It's accelerating. Silver isn't just a monetary metal sitting in vaults waiting for investor interest. It's embedded into the core of the modern economy, quietly powering some of the fastest growing industries in the world. Solar panels, electric vehicles, 5G, infrastructure, advanced electronics. All of it depends on silver, and not in small amounts. The solar industry alone is consuming a rapidly growing share of global supply, and with governments doubling down on energy transition policies, that demand isn't cyclical, it's structural. It doesn't turn off because the price dips, it keeps pulling. And that creates a very unusual situation. Because while investors are reacting to macro conditions, industrial buyers are operating on necessity. They don't care about rate hikes. They don't care about dollar strength. They don't care about short-term volatility. They need silver, and they need it consistently, which means every dip, every liquidation, and every wave of selling in the paper market is being met with underlying demand that doesn't disappear. It absorbs, quietly, relentlessly. And this is what tightens the system over time, because supply isn't keeping up. Mining output isn't surging to meet this demand. New discoveries aren't coming online fast enough, and above-ground inventories are already being drawn down after years of deficits. So what you're left with is a market being pulled in two directions at once. On one side, you have financial pressure pushing price down. On the other, you have real-world demand steadily draining supply. And those two forces, they can coexist for a while, but not forever, because eventually one of them wins. And if industrial demand continues to rise while supply remains constrained, then every ounce being sold in panic today becomes harder to replace tomorrow, which means this phase and this quiet absorption, this steady drain, this overlooked tightening, it's not just background noise, it's the foundation for what could become a much more aggressive move once the market is forced to reconcile price with reality.
Shudder to think what this country would look like under the previous regime, extended 2.0 and under Harris. The one thing that I am concerned about, you could argue he's doing this for American best interests. Okay, fine. And if that's true, great. And I have my own theories on that. We've talked a lot about it. But he's also at the same time, and maybe that's part of what he's trying to do, to push everyone away from using the dollar and protect and become mercantile and just protect the United States and all of its surrounding areas, you know, Greenland and talk about Canada and Cuba and Venezuela, not just natural resources, but also your, you know, your entire ecosystem. My biggest concern is just what happens in 3 years if, or 2.5 years if this administration gets ousted and we don't see a return to similar thinking. We go back Democrat, all of it gets erased. I don't know. I just think that it's the erosion of trust more than anything. And it's been my central focus with you for a long time that, you know, too stupid to be stupid was my common theme last administration. But a lot of the things we're doing, I think, are an extension of too stupid to be stupid in the eyes of the world. Now, I'm not passing judgment on it, on any of his actions. I'm just simply saying the world looking back at us would say, yeah, that's stupid what they're doing. And maybe they don't understand it. But it's just another reason to not trust a country who is fiscally irresponsible, who is wielding the stick instead of an open hand for cooperation, and doing things that are certainly atypical and not conventional. And, you know, they will have ramifications, in my opinion.
You also are uniquely poised at the both forward and backward looking in the precious metal supply chain between the mint supply, wholesalers, retailers, and the public demand. Can you talk to us about the dynamics that you're seeing there in terms of supply and demand and different product availability and premiums?
You know, it's really interesting because all we see is trouble in the exchanges, right? You know, India just came out and mandated that gold and silver ETF switch from London linked valuation benchmarks to domestic Indian exchanges. Why? They don't trust the LBMA or the COMEX anymore. We see massive deliveries coming off of all of the markets. And on a very high level, what matters in silver and gold right now is not the paper quote. It's where the metal is going. And the metal is moving east. Inventories are draining. Shanghai is paying up, right? They're paying a 13% VAT and a 13% premium. They're the ones who eat the VAT, not the shipper. It's the recipient when the metal leaves the Shanghai Metals Exchange. So they're willing to pay 25% more than the Western benchmark. And this is the disconnect. Paper says one thing, physical says another. And when the real bars are leaving the Western vaults for the higher bids, market is telling you the price, that the paper price is wrong. Now, what's interesting is that you have traders at that level who see through that and are standing for delivery, whereas the people on the retail side, largely the public, sees it the other way, and they would see weakness or.
And this is the point where everything converges. Because what happens when a market built on paper promises runs into real-world scarcity, it doesn't adjust smoothly. It breaks. Up. Until now, the paper market has been in control. Price has been dictated by leverage, by contracts, by short-term flows and macro narratives. But that control only works as long as physical supply can meet delivery demands. And that's where the cracks are starting to form. Because with ongoing deficits, rising industrial demand, and steady accumulation, the amount of available silver in the system is quietly shrinking, not on paper, but in reality. And when that available supply gets tight enough, something changes. Delivery starts to matter. Confidence starts to matter. Because if even a small percentage of market participants begin demanding physical instead of rolling contracts, the system gets stressed very quickly. This is how short squeezes are born, not from hype, but from imbalance. Too many claims, not enough metal, and when that imbalance reaches a tipping point, price doesn't gradually rise to correct it. It moves violently, gaps higher, repricing in real time, a scramble for supply in a market that suddenly realizes there isn't enough to go around. And this is exactly what analysts like Schechtman are pointing toward, a moment where the paper market loses its grip, where physical demand overrides synthetic supply, and where price is forced to catch up, all at once. Because once that shift begins, it feeds on itself. Rising prices attract attention. Attention brings in new buyers. New buyers increase pressure on supply. And suddenly, what looked like a quiet, controlled market turns into a rush, a surge, a breakaway move that leaves anyone waiting on the sidelines completely locked out. And if that scenario plays out, then what we're seeing right now isn't just a correction. It's compression, pressure building beneath the surface. Right before the vessel, this release.
Non-correlation, you know, where they don't, because the media has missed this completely, the deliveries. That's all that matters to me. I've said that over and over and over again. Who's standing for delivery? That's all that matters, right? So if that be the case, then the big money would understand that. They're standing for delivery where price is nothing more than a tool of misdirection. But the public looks at it the opposite way. So it's interesting. Availability has gotten a little bit better. Premiums have come down a little bit. The business is still strong, but not like it should be in the face of what the most well-informed traders in the world are doing, and that is bleeding dry the LBMA, the COMEX, and the Shanghai Metals Exchange. And people at that level do not do these kinds of things for the heck of it. So I would simply say to you that it is an opportune time in terms of availability and in terms of price. It's still a messed up market in many respects, largely still from the fallout of the massively spiked rates of margin, which have come down because open interest has disappeared. So they want to get some more. You know, you don't. If you have no one to take the other side, the commercial banks or the other, it's hard to push things around if you don't have the other side. The open interest said it's too expensive for me. I'm out now. Bottom line is what I'm getting at is that at the highest levels, demand is off the charts through physical redemption, off the charts. Down here, it's still strong, but nowhere near as strong as it should be because people are too emotional. And I think, to me, this is just shaking out the speculation in paper, and corrections are good. It balances out the sentiment. When everyone is saying it's going to the moon, it's going to the moon, it's going to the moon, it's time for a break, and knocking that down gets the weak hands out. This is the time to be buying, not once it reconfirms its trajectory higher. And we've seen this every single time. We're not making lower lows. It's just goes up, it corrects, it trades sideways for a while, and then it goes up again, it corrects. And every time it corrects, it's the same thing. People freak out. It's over. Time to go. And then they look back and say, crud, why did I not trust the fact that nothing's changed? In fact, the world's getting crazier by the day. And even if you can't articulate it, you have to feel that everything is just getting intense, and not the time to be bailing on your positions. But premiums are reasonable. Availability is decent. As far as I'm concerned, we haven't seen anything yet as to where this is going. But I want to say one thing real quick, and I mean this to my soul. Dunnigan, if I ever wake up one morning and say, you know, it's time to leave this market and find alternatives, as God is my witness, I will say that. And if I believe it, because I've spent too much time trying to retain credibility, I make mistakes. I try to tell you if I've made a mistake. I'm not perfect. I work hard. But if I believe that the run is over, I will tell you, and I believe we are nowhere near the end of the run.
For people who want to take advantage of this,
and this is why the biggest mistake small investors can make right now is believing the price is telling them the truth. Because if you followed what's really happening beneath the surface, then this moment starts to look very different. What looks like weakness and is actually absorption. What feels like risk is actually transition. And what appears to be the end of the move may be the final phase before it begins. Andy Schechtman's warning isn't about today's price. It's about what happens next. Because when a market with shrinking supply, rising demand, and growing physical stress finally breaks free from paper control, the repricing isn't linear. It's explosive. And that's where the idea of extreme price targets starts to come into play. Not because of hype, not because of speculation, but because when price has been suppressed, distorted, and disconnected for long enough, the correction doesn't just bring it back to fair value, it overshoots violently. That's how you go from a market trading in the double digits to something that shocks the entire financial system. That's how moves happen, that most people think are impossible, right up until they're happening, and by the time it becomes obvious, it's too late. Because the real opportunity was never during the breakout. It was during the confusion, during the doubt, during the volatility, during moments exactly like this, where conviction is hardest to hold. So the question isn't but whether silver will move, it's whether you'll recognize the setup before the rest of the market does. Because if this pressure releases the way many believe it will, then the move that follows won't give second chances. If you've made it this far and you want to stay ahead of what's coming in the silver market, make sure you subscribe and stay informed, because this story is far from over. And as always, this is not financial advice, and you should speak to a professional before making any financial decisions.